Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, dear friends. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. We've come now to Ephesians chapter 6. Paul gives us in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 and following, what I call informally a code of Christian conduct. As a subset of that, he deals with relationships that we all have to deal with. When I say all, I don't mean without exception. Not everybody gets married, but most of us do. He tells us how, in reverence to the Lord, we ought to order ourselves and conduct ourselves, how we ought to order the home. He dealt with that in chapter 5, verse 22 through 23. Now he comes to children, and he says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord." Why? One solid reason. For this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise attached, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And then he talks about fathers. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Then he talks about domestic slaves or servants, which were common in those days. So many members of the church were slaves. In fact, most of Roman society were enslaved peoples. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and sincerity of heart as to Christ. That is, be obedient to them in that spirit. Don't be obedient by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. With good will, render service as to the Lord, not as to men. In the process, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And masters, there were a few among Christians who were Roman citizens and wealthy enough to own slaves. Do the same things to them. Give up threatening. Don't treat them like slaves. Treat them in the full dignity that belongs to fellow human beings, and particularly brothers and sisters in Christ, knowing that both their master and yours is in heaven, and there will be no partiality with him. First of all, let's look at the duty of children to parents. Paul goes right to the divine precept, "Children, obey your parents." Then he adds, "in the Lord." That phrase qualifies that obedience. It expresses its spirit. That is, children, obey your parents in devotion to the Lord's will. He's speaking to children who are old enough to understand and for these things to be an issue. This is a matter of the will of God. In the whole matter of authority, we are first and foremost under the rule of God. This is God's will, so treat it as such. He surrounds it by that phrase in the Lord with a condition that disallows any compliance with parents' wishes that deviates from it. Parents may want something from their children, particularly pagan parents, that is completely contrary to God's will. That's why he says, "obey your parents in the Lord." It's a moral duty. He adds, "for this is right." God has so ordered human society that the smallest social unit, the home, requires that children be submissive, be subject to their parents. It is right. It is right because God said so. You know, my friends, if there is no God, then there is no moral law. There's no basis for moral law. If there's not a superseding authority over all mankind, over all creation, who has said this is right and that is wrong, whatever this or that happens to be, then moral authority does not exist. As Schaeffer once put it, you cannot prove that it's better to help a little old lady across the street than to push her down in front of a car. Without divine revelation, we don't know what is right and what is wrong. We may think we know, we may feel that we know, but we don't know. And that's exactly the advantage of atheism as they conceive it. That's exactly where a lot of men of science want to go. They want to be God. They don't want there to be a God. Some have even said so. They don't want there to be a God because they do not want that moral authority over them. They want to be able to do as they please. When he says this is right, that's anchored in the fifth commandment, where children are told, honor your father and your mother. And this precept is morally timeless. But it can be situationally relative in that there can be those evil-minded parents who may require of their children to lie, cheat, steal, or even murder or prostitute themselves or whatever. And in those cases where children have a choice and where they have the power to follow their own will, they should not obey their parents. That's all completely consistent with what the apostles told the Jewish authorities who told them to shut down this preaching about Jesus. Basically, they said, you'll recall in the book of Acts, well, you judge for yourselves whether it is better to obey God or to obey men. Whenever human authority tries to supersede God's authority and to countermand it, we as Christians cannot obey it. There's a general promise. It's the only commandment, Paul says, to which a promise is specifically attached. And that promise is, when the fifth commandment says, honor your father and mother, it adds that it may be well with you and that you may live long in the earth. That commandment not only honors God when it's obeyed, it promotes the general welfare. For God gave these commandments for our good and for our welfare. It enhances physical survival. So let children understand that this is nothing arbitrary. In the divine order of things, parents are wiser than children, usually. It is just prudent for children to obey their parents. It's not an encumbrance. Children will do all kinds of foolish things because they are children. They're not wise enough. They don't understand life well enough. They don't understand the streets well enough. Children don't get it, even though they think they do. You put a young man, especially young men, you put him in a car at 16 years of age. It's not always a matter of driving skills. We just know the ways of children, and they think they're bulletproof. They think that what happens to others can't happen to them. So that's why all the parental lectures, that's why parents put constraints upon their kids. Kids don't always understand the ways of the night. That's why parents say you can't stay out all night. Parents know that the worst people come out the later it gets, and worse things tend to happen at those times. Kids don't understand their hormones and all that kind of thing, and that's why parents tend to put limits around their interaction with the opposite sex. So many things like that that are perfectly obvious. So let children, let young people understand that this commandment is put there by a good God who knows life from the beginning to the end. A good God knows that children and their youth and their youthful folly need to be reined in, need to be checked, and some of the checking is galling to them. Nevertheless, it needs to happen. It promotes the general welfare, and it enhances their physical survival. Children who are just allowed to run free, do whatever, whenever, they're usually going to run into trouble, sometimes serious trouble, and may even lose their lives. Because there was no oversight, there was no supervision, there was no parent there, no parental control. Usually when you find juvenile delinquents, very often there's just a lack of parental control. So let every Christian youth understand their duty. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. That's all you need to know. You don't need to say to mom and dad, young person, every time they tell you, do this or don't do that. Why? You are to obey them because it's right. Now, I'm not suggesting that parents should never give a reason for these things. I think it's good. I always liked to reason when I was young. I was just wired up in such a way that if something made sense to me, I conformed to it a lot easier. Some kids, it doesn't even help them, but it did in my case. I didn't then like to hear, and nor do I generally as a parent, though my kids are long ago grown up, I never particularly liked to hear, and I very seldom did, because I said so. And I don't particularly like to give that answer. I like to be able to explain it. But there comes a time when parents are a little exasperated with kids, and they will say, because I said so. That's a good enough reason. All you need to know is that God said so. Obey your parents. You don't need any better reason than that. If you know Christ, like your parents know Christ, then you need to obey your parents. You may even have unchristian parents, believing child. But if they're not asking you to do anything outside the scope of God's law, then obey your parents. God put them there. It is right. That's all you need to understand. But the Lord adds more than that. He says that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. There's no guarantee. It's a proverb. And proverbs are not absolutes. They are as good as their intention, and their intention is to state observations about the way life generally works. A kid can be a wonderful kid and very obedient to their parents and be in a car crash and get killed or something else, have a disease. Who knows? Their life may not be long upon the earth. There's no absolute promise here that if you're an obedient child, if you respect your parents and do it as unto the Lord, that you're going to live a long life. But a lot more of those kids that do respect their parents, do honor God in that way, a lot more of those kids are going to live longer, all things being equal, than those who don't. That's the idea. Now, we parents can blunder, and he next talks about that. He says, and fathers. Fathers, of course, being assumed to be the head of the house, it doesn't assume that mothers never have any part in the discipline of a child. But in the biblical order of things, fathers take the lead. They're responsible for the home. So he next says, in a Christian home, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and in the instruction of the Lord. What's that mean, parents? Do not provoke your children to wrath. Well, there are ways that parents can exasperate their children, unreasonably exasperate them. One is by unreasonable expectations. Some parents, for example, just to pick out something that is pretty common, they want their kids, they're high achievers themselves, and they want their kids to excel in school, or they may want their kids to excel in athletics. It may be a case of parents trying to live their life through their children. Now, this is a bit pathological, but it happens all the time. And so mom and dad may put enormous pressure on their child or some of their children to excel academically or to excel athletically or perhaps in some other way. That can deform a child and that can exasperate them, your unreasonable expectations. Take my two grandchildren who are now grown. My son-in-law was at one point a world-class athlete enshrined in the Hall of Fame at Marshall University. He was a track man. Well, when he had his children, his son, Alex, my beloved grandson, was unlike John. You could watch him run even from a kid, and his stride was not all that athletic. My granddaughter, however, turned out to be very athletic, and a coach watched her run in high school and said, oh, my goodness, look at that stride. But she hated track. She loved gymnastics and was highly competitive and very successful. But the point is, if a parent, and John and Christy didn't, but if a parent is determined that their child is going to excel athletically in some endeavor, but they weren't made athletic, well, then you can exasperate them. You can discourage them by unreasonable expectations and send them off track. And there are other ways you can do that. Unreasonable expectations, capricious demands. This also is unreasonable, but you're just constantly making demands on them. Your kids have plans, and all of a sudden you come up and you and mom have a plan, or you have a plan, and without any warning, you just pop up and say, Johnny, I want you to do this. And Johnny has to put all of his well-made plans on hold. It's capricious. Well, parents can get away with that once in a while, and kids can tolerate that, but if that's constantly happening, that can exacerbate, provoke your children to wrath, and cause them to go out of line, to go off the rails. What I think Paul probably has more in mind than anything else, another way to exasperate them, is inconsistent discipline. Parents sometimes are just ruled by emotion instead of being ruled by principle. You ought to know what the rules are. The kids ought to know what the rules are in the family order of things. You ought to not make up the rules as you go along. And one time when you're feeling good, just wave off things that on another day you discipline for, because you're feeling good today and you just don't want to go through it, so you just wave it off. And on another day, you come down on them with all fours. That's terribly confusing to kids. Your discipline is just completely inconsistent. And then another thing that can exasperate children as much as anything, and that's excessive discipline. You know, we parents have a lot of pressures. Sometimes we bring the pressures that are at work, we bring them home with us. And the family becomes the wall that we take out our frustration on. And if we have to discipline our children, we sometimes are excessive. The punishment does not fit the crime. There's not a thing in the world wrong with spanking. But there's something very wrong with spanking that's in excess of the crime. Sometimes we strike first and ask questions later. My dad was rarely excessive with his discipline, but once in a while he was prone not to hear the whole story and just start banging the fanny. I was guilty of that myself a few times and had to apologize to my girls and say, "Honey, I'm sorry. I never got the whole story." Excessive discipline, inconsistent discipline, capricious demands, and unreasonable expectations. There are four culprits in our domestic habits that can provoke a child to anger. Let me mention something else, and it fits in there, I think, with unreasonable expectations. Parents can be too loosey-goosey, and they can be too tight. Parents can be too controlling. Now, I commend all Christian parents who have their eyes on the ball. My hat's off to any Christian parent who sees their duty, and unlike so many who seem not to care and don't seem to want to worry themselves with disciplining their children, bringing them under control, just letting them run around like crazy, tear up your house, my house, or anything else, and just kind of laugh about it. Kids will be kids who don't seem to want to form up their kids in a disciplined way. I cannot commend that kind of parent, but there are other parents who take their job very seriously, and they need to be commended. But sometimes we can take that job of parenting seriously, but we can be imprudent in the way that we do it. Parents, children have to have some latitude. You have to give them some freedom. You can train them up. You can nurture them in the discipline and the admonition of the Lord. That's a crucial precept. But you can also be too controlling. I've told this story throughout my life. It was just typical of the way I was brought up. My parents weren't perfect, but I tell you, I feel, did a great job. They were very wise. I remember one time I was in about the sixth grade. It was about as bad as things got. I was kind of raised out in the country, not too far, but was out on the dirt road, if it tells you anything. And we had a big garden, and I started, like many boys at that time, smoking corn silk. Some kids today don't understand that. That's that silky, dried thing on the end of a ear of corn. I would roll it up in paper, and I would smoke it. And before the summer was over, I had graduated to real cigarettes and finally cigars. And I kept my stash hidden in two places. One, well beyond our home out in the field where there was a tree stump, kind of like a squirrel. I hid it back in that stump. And the other, and about another 100 yards in another direction from my home, down in a culvert. I would go past the road, go down over the bank in that culvert, kept my stash there. So as I say, by the end of the summer, sixth grade, I'd graduated to cigars. One day, my mother was going to the grocery store, and I was walking up that dirt road to her house, and I came to the steps which led up a bank and met Mom just at the top of the steps. And this was classic for her. She said, "Oh, Jimmy, honey, I'm going to the store. I wanted to talk to you for just a minute. I don't have much time," but then she just hit me right between the eyes. "Honey, your dad and I know that you're smoking. I had no idea that they knew, but they knew. I don't know how long they knew, but they knew. We had hoped that we were raising a different kind of boy. Maybe we were wrong. That maybe was very, very big in my mind. Maybe we were wrong. But in any case, honey, please don't be like a little juvenile delinquent, hiding things in tree stumps and in culverts. She not only knew, she knew exactly where I was hiding the stuff. How did she know? I never did learn. Then she said, since I'm going to the store, Jimmy, what brand do you prefer? That did it. I never smoked another thing the rest of my life. And that maybe left room. It wasn't totally condemning. It meant they hadn't lost hope for me completely. But I was the type of kid, I don't really know how I'd have responded, but if my mom had flown all over me like hot lava and said, thou shalt not smoke, thou shalt never smell of that stuff again, thou shalt not do this. Honestly, I don't really know what would have happened. But with me, she handled it in the best way. And that would have been best for a lot of kids. Back in those days, movies were pretty tame by today's standards. But when my friend Don would often call, as he did on Saturday, and say, hey, Jim, you want to go to a movie? Well, usually it was a dumb Western or something. But Mom and Dad, who were serious about these things, took their parental responsibilities seriously. Never once, that I recall, never once did they say, no, you cannot go. They would always say, well, what's it about? And I would nearly always say, well, I don't know. Don just called. Well, find out. Pick up the phone, call my friend Don, who just lived down a few houses. Say, hey, Don, do you know what the movie's about? What's showing? I don't know. I'll find out. Then he'd call back and say, it's so-and-so. Well, as I say, it was always tame by today's standards, really tame. And I'd say to Mom or Dad, more often it was Mom, but sometimes it was Dad, it's so-and-so, it's about this or that or whatever. Okay, guess you can go to that. What they were teaching me was, Jimmy, be discriminating. We are Christians. There are moral standards. If you're going to follow Christ, you want to get in line with His ways, not just expose your eyes and your mind to any old thing. They were careful. They were conscientious. But they weren't all that controlling. Back in those days, and I'm dating myself, but of course, you know I'm no longer a young pup. Back in those days, we used to have these interminable revival meetings. An evangelist would come once or twice a year for 2 weeks. Yeah, I know there was school going on, but my mom and dad didn't give two hoots and a holler. They wanted us to go to church. As I got older, I didn't always want to go to those meetings. And they did not say to me, we're a family and we all go and you're going. They did not do that. But my dad would ask me, well, Jimmy, why is it you don't want to go? Oh, I don't like that preacher. Well, I don't like him either. He gets all over my conscience, but I need that. And that sort of thing. And not wanting to lose face, I would go. And it made a lot of difference. Dear friends, do not provoke your children to anger. I've mentioned several ways that we can do that. But one thing that I didn't mention in that list is by being too controlling. And you can send your kid off in another direction. I used to see it all the time when I was teaching in Bible college, where parents trying to control the environment of these kids were too controlling. And these kids eventually just broke out. The parents got the opposite result of what they wanted. Well, thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.